You're listening to the Plus Music Podcast with Brian and Nick, and today we're sitting down with co-founder and CEO of Musio, Hazel Savage. Hazel joins us from London to chat about her background as a musician in punk bands and her transition into the music industry and eventually founding Musio, a one-of-a-kind AI listening software recently acquired by SoundCloud. Our conversation touches on Hazel's journey from indie musician to industry veteran, exciting new startups in the music business, and how artists from all walks of life stand to benefit from these new leaps forward in music tech.
Cool.
Awesome. Hazel Savage, thank you for joining us here on the Plus Music Podcast. Lot to talk about. We know you're the CEO of Musio. We know that there's been a recent acquisition by SoundCloud. We have a lot to talk about. Love to actually just take it back and tell you, or have you give us a little bit of a debrief on Musio, what you guys do, how you started, etc.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And actually, I sort of refer to myself now as I was the previous CEO and co-founder of Musio. But of course, as part of the acquisition, one of the documents you have to sign is your official resignation when you sell the company. So then obviously then you get an immediate contract that rehires you into the new job. So I'm officially the VP of Music Intelligence at SoundCloud. And then so took me a while to get used to that, because I've been saying the same job title for about 4 years. So it still trips off the tongue, but it's been an interesting journey. And, you know, there's a kind of a short version, a long version, and a very long version, but the kind of the steps that kind of got there, my very, very first job in music ever, and I've only ever worked in music, was I used to work at HMV, the record store, in London. So right on, I'm kind of pointing in the direction of it. It was right on Oxford Street. It was the flagship store. And I worked at HMV part-time when I was at university. And then I went full-time after I finished. And so I was really, living the record store dream. And of course, it's still retail. And back in the day, it was, you know, people like, that's not an industry job. That's not a real job. But of course, and it was minimum wage, but it was, it's an experience that you can't get now. So I really enjoyed it. And then from there, I was very, very lucky to interview a small startup hardly anyone had heard of at the time, called Shazam, who hired me. I was like employee number 25. And then and obviously then I was properly out of retail and into music tech. And from there, I've worked at Universal Music, Pandora, BandLab. And then about 4 years ago, decided, I think I could give this a go. I think I could do a good job. So started Musio in 2018.
Nice. Excellent. And so when you started Musio, what was it going to be when you first started, and what did it end up? Was it a big delta, or was it pretty close to what you thought you were going to build?
Good question. I don't think it was too far from the initial idea, although I guess it depends on what your definition is. When I started working with my then co-founder, Aaron, who's a Swedish tech guy, my sort of top line concept was, in my previous job at BandLab, we had one full-time curator, and it was his job to listen to everything and then build playlists and pin them to the homepage. And, you know, he would listen to like 200 tracks a day. But sometimes he would come to me at the end of the day, because it was kind of a UGC upload platform, and be like, I didn't hear anything good enough to playlist. I didn't pick up any themes. And I'd be like, don't worry. Listen to another 200 songs tomorrow. Keep me posted. and that could go for 3 or 4 days. So we were like putting out one playlist every 3 to 4 days. And we were listening to 200 songs was less than 1% of the daily uploads. And I was like, this is really inefficient. Why is there not a technology that could at least listen to everything that's uploaded, act as a first pass filter, and, you know, be able to say my curator wants to build a hip hop playlist with all female vocals that are all high quality recordings, studio recordings. Why can't I set those parameters and just be given, say, 50 tracks? And then, yes, I as a human then decide what goes on the playlist. But I was like, surely some sort of first pass filter automation would be helpful. So I approached my co-founder with the idea of, could we teach an AI to listen to music? And the idea that if you could manage the volume of music that is now available. And you still leave the decision-making in the hands of the humans, but you automate a lot of those processes. And so that was kind of the initial company idea. And that's still what we do to this day. But I, you know, the journey, those 4 years, you know, because obviously when we came out of the gate with run everything through our system, every music company in the world went, no, who are you? You're a startup. We've never heard of you. That's expensive. We don't want to do it. It's weird. We've never heard of it. So of course, we then had to kind of break it down into very easy to understand products that also de-risked the idea for the companies that we worked with. So, you know, say that, you know, rather than dropping everything into our system and letting us build you an end-to-end interface for playlisting, how about if we just sell you the genre tags for all your music? And we give you the tags, you decide where they live in your database, you own your own data, we just perform the tagging for you. And that became an easier sell. So the idea and the end goal is always the same. How you productize that and get it into the hands of the consumer, there was a couple of deltas along the way.
Interesting. So And when you guys were building like the technical components of it, did you start with open source stuff that was out there? There's a lot of cool MIR things, you know. Did you guys start there and then just customize and build it out, or like what was the path of your deep tech part of it?
Yeah, absolutely. So everything we built was proprietary and built in-house. We didn't start with anything open source. I was very lucky in that my co-founder, Aaron, who I met through a startup incubator, EF, Entrepreneur First, is an absolutely phenomenal AI developer. When we first met, he'd been doing it for 12 years. He's now been doing it for, you know, 16, 17 years, you know, really at the forefront of the technology, and had built many models before, previously for financial trading companies, for back end of casinos, for gaming companies. So he already had a lot of models in his head, a lot of ideas of how it could be done. But there was a few fun things, you know, and he has this incredibly, and still does, this incredibly powerful gaming laptop that has the training, the GPUs built in. But he burns through like one a year because they burn hot, right? If you're going to run some training models on them. So we were able to do everything in-house pretty much from day one. But of course, it wasn't an idea, boom, day later it's built. I remember one day while we were still in the incubator, he sort of built a model. And it turned out, rather than being able to tell you, the genre or whether a track was good enough to be on a playlist, it could just tell you if it had found itself. And I was like, I think you've just reinvented Shazam. That's, you basically have built a content ID fingerprinting algorithm, which is fine. You know, it's like, but that's where I was like, we're about 10 years too late for that to be impressive. But, you know, luckily it only took him a day to kind of whip up. So, but that was kind of, we did find our way with the technology in that way.
Interesting. Yeah, that's it's a long road to build the thing that you want it to build, and especially when it's new and doing new stuff.
Yeah,
I have a question for you guys. So like 4 years from start to now you're in SoundCloud, did you change your, are you still kind of doing the same thing now at SoundCloud? Are you working with outside partners to still provide tags and do data sets, or are you only with SoundCloud Music now?
Great question. So the product is still for sale. Musio still exists as an entity. And we kept all of our clients. So all of our previous clients, whether it be Epidemic Sound, BeatStars, BMG, Hypnosis, they all still use our technology. And we were able to keep all of those clients on, and we're signing new clients as well. So I think we just announced today that West One Music Group have started using our technology. So we've actually seen an uptick in the number of clients, as I'm sure you can imagine, you know, being part of a bigger entity that's a household name, it de-risks it for some people, but it also, you know, it gets the word out. So actually one thing I was interested in terms of, you know, when we've been approached about acquisitions before, it wasn't a deal breaker for me, but I was always going to be more interested in a deal that allowed the tech to stay in the market. And I think that's because what I've seen, you know, over the last few years is there's a definite trend of things being bought so nobody else can have them, you know, and, you know, buying it, turning it off, you know, you guys. And I just think that I prefer this industry when it works together. I prefer this industry when it's collaborative. And I almost compare it to, you know, it's a bit like Amazon and AWS. You know, when Amazon launched, you know, Amazon Web Services, you know, an amazing sort of back-end platform, they didn't go and no one else can use it. They thought they could do a better job by monetizing it and making it available for anyone to use. And I think that I like when the music industry works together. You have the ability to become the industry standard because everyone can use your tech. But also, if you look at our clients, they're not really in a competitive space to SoundCloud. So why not help the industry grow as a whole? I'm a big fan of the high tide raises all the boats.
No, it's an important part because the music industry is notoriously hyper competitive and dog eat dog, and clearly it's stunted the ability from the music industry to A, catch up with technology. You saw what happened when Napster came around, and then when finally Spotify did what they were, you know, or the right version of it finally came into market. That was a 10-year time frame, right?
Easy.
I totally hear you loud and clear. The music industry should be a lot more collaborative in order to succeed, because it's still, you know, dwarfed by the games industry and other industries that are a lot more collaborative in that way.
And I think I might be a little idealistic, and, you know, I certainly can't.
Good to be,
you know,
that way.
Reserve the right to change my opinion in 5 years' time. But, you know, I very much felt with, you know, we've seen a real, especially with AI, we've seen a real cycle of a company start and then get acquired very quickly. And all the people that helped them get to that stage are left scrambling for the new solution. And we certainly picked up a lot of clients that way in the early days, you know, who'd had maybe a similar solution or a solution that now didn't exist. So I always just thought the potential was there to grow the industry as a whole and be a little bit less protective. So yeah, that's where we're going for now. So product's still available.
We're living in a world now too. I think the last stat I heard was like 60,000 songs a day being uploaded to just Spotify.
Yeah.
Without something like a Musio, I don't know how we would even keep up with that kind of, you know, demand for metadata on songs. And that's just Spotify. There's, you know, looking at digital experiences new popping up by the dozens every year.
Yeah. And I can tell you as well, we currently tag 1 million tracks a day globally. And so obviously maybe not all of those are unique. Maybe some of a label or a publisher or a DSP might be getting some of the same data from us, but there's volume for us to do 1 million a day. So, you know, that just kind of shows you that, you know, there's a lot of new music that needs categorization.
Wait, is that 1 million new songs, or is that you're doing back catalogs of labels and things as well? Okay.
Yeah. So new,
that
new to
almost
us.
Gave me a heart attack. Yeah. 1 million
new,
songs.
New to us, but yeah, a client might join who's got a back catalog of 5 million tracks and they want to tag it over the space of a year. So, but obviously that 1 million is made up collaboratively of all of our clients, but, you know, there's easily enough audio out there for us to be doing that kind of volume, whether it's back catalog, new, legacy, whatever.
Do you do stems, or do you guys specialize in full composition?
So we do full composition. So any MP3 or WAV, any solid audio file, that's the data that we process.
Got it. So what's it like now being at a much bigger company?
Well, there's kind of not a very interesting answer to this question in that it's very similar, because my job is exactly the same. And I say that as a good thing, you know, because they kept the whole team, they've kept the brand, they've kept the clients. That, you know, my sort of day to day in terms of looking after the team, selling the product, you know, writing the articles for our blog, or, you know, crafting our newsletter, all of that looks very similar right now. You know, we're only 2 months into the acquisition. The part that's different is the least glamorous part, which is like I get paid by someone else. So, which is kind of cool though, because I used to do payroll, so I don't have to do that anymore. So that's kind of a bonus. I don't have the admin. And you know, other things like, you know, how you book a flight, how you you know, decide if you're going to do a panel or not. You know, those things have new process. But generally, the day to day is very similar.
So you started as a punk rock musician. Let's talk about that a little bit.
I did. Well, so I got my first guitar when I was 13, and I got a Fender Telecaster. And funnily enough, I'm actually left-handed, but I learned guitar right-handed. I'm kind of ambidextrous, but it just felt better, and the right-handed guitars were nicer, so I was like, I want this one. And I'm very lucky, my dad bought me my first guitar for my 13th birthday, and has always been hugely supportive of, you know, me just right out of nowhere going, I want to learn the guitar, may I please have one for my birthday, you know. And I don't know, most kids maybe wouldn't continue, but I did. So I got the guitar, and I'm relatively self-taught. I used to have a CD-ROM that used to go into like a really old compact Presario, and it was called the E-Media Guitar Method. And there was like an old white dude with an acoustic on a little video, and I just used to copy what he was playing. That's how I learned guitar. That's not very rock and roll at all. But you know, I got a bit better over the years, and by the time I was 15, I'd formed a sort of a trio of all girl players, and have continued to do that for many years. And I've been working with the same drummer, Allison, for about 10 years now.
That's cool. So you're still playing music?
Yeah. Although now I'm like really, I'm not cool. Like, I play in a covers band with like my husband and our friends, and I play a gig every 12 months. Like, I'm that musician now. Like, I'm not old enough to be like sort of grizzled and playing in like an Irish folk band, you know, like in super
yet.
Cool, but I'm also yet, but I'm also not young enough to be in like a young, like, I remember when I used to live in London, like, I mean, I would go out, we would go out 5 nights a week, and sometimes we would gig 3 or 4 nights and rehearse twice a week. And I honestly don't know where I got the energy from, because I do not have that kind of energy right now. So yeah, but of course I do still play, and I do still play live, but rarely.
Yeah.
Very cool.
That's very cool. So when you're in music and tech, right? What do you think, what's the coolest thing that you've seen come around lately that maybe is related to tagging, AI, whatever? What do you think is the coolest thing that you've seen come around? And we'll start from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So two things spring to mind. But I'll also say, full disclosure, I've invested in both of these companies, because I guess if I see something cool enough and I'm like, I think that's going to work, that's a really good idea, then I'll be like, can I also invest in this company? Very, very small amounts. You know, I'm just getting into my investing career. But the first one would be AudioShake, which is a STEM technology. Yeah. So again, you know, it's so funny. We have a mutual client. And I was on a call with this client one day, and he said, have you heard about AudioShake? And it's STEM technology. And I was like, that never works. Rubbish. Like, there've been so many STEM companies. No one solved it. No good. It doesn't work. He was like, legit, this works. And I was like, suspicious. But I looked it up, and I got one of the AI developers at Musio to take a look to see if it was legit. And they've solved something that no one else has been able to solve: true source separation without loss of quality to the audio. And so, and then when I found, I got introduced to Jessica Powell, the CEO, who's ex-Google. She's super impressive. And, you know, and they've got the real team, they've got the real tech. So I was like, yeah, this is good. I like this one. So, you know, I was like, I'd love to put some money in. You know, you guys have solved something technologically that our industry has been struggling with for years. So I thought that was exciting. And then the second one was really recent. It's an artist marketing company. And usually I'm a bit skeptical about artist marketing, but it's a company. Yeah. Because I'm always like, I don't know. But it's a company called Unheard. It's targeted at the indie and independent artists. And basically it's an app where you sort of sign up with your artist name. It will pull your Spotify profile. It will pull all of your other sort of online profile information. And then it sort of auto generates a to-do list, which is like, you should pitch for this playlist. Click the button, put your pitch together, fires it off. You should create an Instagram advert that targets this. What goal do you want to achieve? And it's got like a bunch of free stuff, a bunch of paid stuff, and then a bunch of like premium stuff. But I just, when I saw the app, it was so slick and it was so impressive. And they're doing great monthly revenue. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, you guys have solved something as well. This is exciting. So those are kind of my two favorite picks. But yeah, full disclosure, I now have a vested interest in those two companies.
Well, that's cool. It's good to have you on the side, I'm sure. We've heard of Audio Shake, and it seems like they're doing something pretty cool. I think they won like the some award. There was some.
It was the California best startup. I just saw it today on LinkedIn.
Oh, that, yeah. There's that, but there's another one where they were like a. There was a Stems Off kind of thing. I can't remember who sponsored. It was like Warner or something like that. Mm. They'd got first prize, and then like that open, there's an open source that got second. But did hear about them. That's pretty cool. It seems like with music tech, you know, the biggest challenge is to get the music that people mostly listen to, which is label music, to be able to enter into the possibilities of what the technology has the promise to do. Like there's the back end infrastructure piece around technology, but then there's also like, how do you get music to be more usable to the public or to more consumers, you know, and either on a business to business or just a consumer level. And like, that's the stuff that me and Brian pay a lot of attention to, is just like, how does music change in enough way that people can, where it'll like kind of catch up to what they're doing in the digital universe, right? Like,
well, I think this is another big challenge to address. And, you know, funnily enough, you know, I wanted to build my first startup without having to be concerned about licensing or royalties, because, you know, that can kill a startup really, really quickly if that's the core of your business. But it's so funny, and I'm not going to name names, but some of the clients that you would least expect when they've come to us, you know, I'm talking the biggest names in the industry on both sides of the table, they would come to us and say, we would love to use your technology. We want to set it up 50,000 tracks. How's that going to work? And I'm like, great. You need to give us access to your audio. We'll drop it into a dashboard for you and it'll be ready to go. And I can't even count on all my hands and toes the numbers of times that the industry person has then said to me, could you just scrape that audio from us? Could you do that? That would be quicker. And I just say to them, technically, yes. Legally, no. You know, unless you're explicitly telling me that you want me to. But that's what's so surprising, is that the companies we work with have bad access to their own data. And I do sympathize. Moving audio files around is difficult. Moving video files around is even more difficult. But, you know, the fact that these companies don't even feel like they have movability and interoperability with their own data is horrifying.
And they're also, some of these folks are using 1997 like year built technology, right? Like it's very slow to get them to even have modern tech and modern ways of doing things. So yeah, it's an interesting mixed bag. And then you get into performance rights and that's a whole other thing. The music industry is a really interesting business because I've been like paying attention to stuff for so long that it seems like it's an asset, right? It's an asset class that it's kind of like, yeah, well, you want what we have, so deal with it, you know? Like yeah. Versus how can we make this valuable to customers? It's like, it's a flip. It's a very like, yeah, you want us, we're cool. You know, we're cool. Yeah. You want this, you can't get anything but this. You know, there's no other way to get Warner Music or whatever. And they all seem to be kind of like modernizing at different paces because they're very big organizations. And yeah. You know, there's very smart people in those companies that we've even talked with. And again, like you said, there's a lot of handcuffs, I think, to what they can do.
But
and
you can see what they want. The industry's like it's changed so much just over the last 5 years, let alone 25 years. But if you think about the 90s and the introduction of the CD, just kind of these panic moments of the industry. And then you should know this like Nick and I do. If you had, I have a company that's music and tech. If you would have said that 5-6 years ago, you probably got as many doors slammed in your face as we did. But now you're seeing kind of, at least in my experience, some grip starting to loosen. You know, you see the labels that were so no way unless you have this much money are starting to kind of be a little bit open to some of these technologies and use cases that tech can help propel actually a music business or move it forward or create new experiences. So there is a change. And I'm sure, I mean, did you ever get the door slammed in your face for saying we have a company that's music and tech?
Yeah, definitely. The metaphorical door, at least. I'm lucky to say it was never a literal door. But I think one of the things that was interesting for us when we were growing was, firstly, because it was worse. We weren't just music tech, we were AI, right? And it used to be that 4 years ago, when you said AI, everyone thought you meant writing music with AI, which nobody wants. That's the short answer to that question. So
trying though.
And as an academic pursuit, impressive. As a parlor trick, very cool. I think we're still some ways off commercialization. That's my personal take. That's an opinion. So I'm always happy, as I said before, always happy to be wrong. And I do think there are some cool companies in that space. I do like what Endel's doing. I think it sounds really cool. And so, you know, I do think there are innovative approaches, but the whole, we're going to replace, you know, an artist with an artificially generated pop song. That's where I think it kind of falls down at the minute. So we had the problem that everyone thought that's what we did. So we really put a lot of effort into changing the narrative to split the AI discussion between generative and descriptive. And we are descriptive AI. We work with the audio you already have. And generative is a whole different business. And so we kind of did a lot of work to kind of set that message up. But then also, we also suffered from the fact that, you know, I actually ended up having a great meeting with the team at Cobalt. And, you know, firstly, it was hard to get in the door, right? Because they see music AI and they're like, oh, you know, the first suspicion is that you don't really have the tech, that you're just using a flashy word and, you know, you're going to bamboozle them, but there's no real technology. So firstly, it's hard to get a meeting. But then secondly, I remember when I showed them the demo of what we were doing, they just said to us, oh, thank goodness, we just thought this was going to be another one of those weird synonym companies, you know, where someone's you know, manually tagged something and then is using an algorithm to auto-generate 15 words that also mean happy. So you feel like you're getting a lot of data, but it's not really AI and it's not really smart. And so, you know, they started, we've got a demo on our website where you can drop any track in, and they started trying to drop in lots of things to trick us, you know, artists that were metal that had released an EDM track, or, you know, things that you wouldn't expect. And our AI will generate the data based on the audio file, not who it knows the artist to be or who it thinks. So they were really impressed with the technology at that point, which was great. But those were the metaphorical hurdles that we had to climb. And sometimes I guess we never got the meeting because they couldn't, you know, that was just their instant assumption. Either it's not real tech or it's tech we don't want. So, but you know, that's kind of changed as well. You know, the first 2 years of building the company was all that struggle, all that slog. You know, I remember going to South by Southwest in 2018, and I didn't get selected to do any of the official events, no panels, no official pitches, you know, nothing. But I just went to the open pitch event. And I got up and did the 60-second pitch at Brian Zisk's event, which is phenomenal. And first of all, he was blown away to the point he ended up becoming an investor. But also, straight after that session, I had a queue of like 30 people wanting to talk to me. So you need to create your own opportunities. But then I will say I went to South by this year as well, 2022. And people would come up to me. Hi, you're Musio, right? You sell tags? Yeah, we'd like that. We've got 20,000 songs. How do we get in touch? Here's my card. Great. I'll email you. And for the conversation to go from, you know, who are you? What are you talking about? To people knowing who I am and knowing what we sell and wanting to buy it. And that being a 2 second exchange was phenomenal. And that was, you know, I probably kind of missed the transition part because it was a pandemic. So it happened not in person. But to kind of go 2018 and then 2022 and see the difference in approach was really interesting.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
That's cool that you guys got there where it starts to become inbound versus getting the foot in the door. That's super interesting. Congrats on all the progress with the company.
Thank you.
Yeah, just amazing stuff.
So, well, Hazel, been great chatting with you.
So
thanks
good.
For taking the time. And do you want to share some of this punk rock?
I'd love to hear some of that punk rock music.
Definitely. I'm just trying to decide. I've got a song called Oi Oi Oi. I think that could be perfect. I'm gonna check it for obscenities. I think there's gonna be some of that stuff going on. Got
That's
some
okay.
other tracks. I'm gonna send you something through. But yeah, these were probably all recorded 10 years ago when I was living in Australia. Same drummer, Alison, bassist called Jasmine, and yeah, we were gigging all the time. You know, 3-piece all girl punk rock. It's what you need.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice.
And what were you? What did you guys call yourself? Just out of curiosity.
We were called Gin Kinta. So nice. Ginkinta. I think I still have a box of shirts. If you let me know the size, you know, they're all black and white. Black with a white logo, white with a black logo. Probably have a ton of XLs left. Let me know.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, we definitely got to have you back on for a follow-up here in the future, Hazel. It sounds like a lot of great things are going on with Musio and now, you know, your partnership here now, acquisition with SoundCloud. Keep us posted. We're going to send some links, put some links in our episode here to send people to check out you and Musio as well.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
All right, Hazel. Thanks.